Hello again, and welcome everybody again to BitNote. It's David and Colin here, and we'll be playing video game music and talking about the games they're from. Hope you enjoy! Alright, to start things off, I think I'll just go for a nice, fun, and innocent music theme from a classic video game. Hope you enjoy! And that's a fun little theme there. That was from the video game Putt and Putter. It was released originally on the Sega Mega Drive and the Sega Master System. And it was composed by Nasubi. So back then, a lot of these Japanese game developers didn't really have their whole name in the actual game credits. So we just get it's Nasubi. So we hope whatever Nasubi is out there, that we thank you for making a very nice little tune. And the game is full of those really nice little tunes as well. It's actually a fairly straightforward putting game, but it's got fun things like buffers like you'd find in pinball machines and little moving platforms so that, you know, conveyor belts. So if you putted the ball across it, you'd have to correct for the so that when it went across the conveyor belt, it would compensate for being thrown off course by the conveyor belt. And basically, just like any simple putting game, the idea would be just to get that ball into the hole in the fewest shots possible. Although usually, because it's a video game, you'd be dealing with rather more dangerous terrain than you would be if it was just any normal crazy golf sort of thing. In a way, it's kind of similar to Crazy Golf. Zany Golf, I mean, which was an Amiga game, which kind of had a similar concept, although two different games. But it reminds me, there aren't really that many crazy putting games out there these days where you go through crazy little courses to try to get into the hole and there's all these fun things. But, oh well, that's the way things go at times. Putt and Putter was developed by Sims Co. Limited, so very corporate Japanesey sounding name there. And as you can see, it was just a little fun game. It actually got a kind of a re-release. One company called, I think, Blaze Electronics was releasing all these small handheld consoles with all these classic Game Gear games in them. And I think Putt and Putter was one of them. So yeah, although now that I think about it, I think that those handhelds have sold out now. So it's going to be tricky to get your hands on. But it was a fun little game. Okay, I think we'll move on to actually one track that that's got a bit to do with the Irish. This next track does indeed. In case you're not familiar, there is an Irish games developer out there called Terry Kavanagh. He's now he's now working from England, but he's created a lot of classic games, some music of which I've played, such as The Letter V Six Times, also known as VVV. VVV, and he's also made a lot of, he's a very well-known indie game developer who's developed quite a few titles, and this is some music from his most recent title called Super Hexagon. Now, before I start this track, I just want to let you know, Super Hexagon is basically an extremely fast reactive game where you basically have to move this little triangle around this hexagon and things are flying at you. It's kind of a psychedelic game, but the thing is, this music is playing in the background while you're playing it, but because the game is so hard, you rarely ever hear the track the full way through. So unless you actually download this yourself or listen to it online, you're likely not to actually be able to hear the song the whole way through if you play the game. Or if you manage to hear this entire song the whole way through while you're playing the game, it just shows you have an insane level of skill. But enough about that. Why don't I actually play the track, and you're going to talk a bit more about the game after. Sounds good? All right.
Oh,
And what you just heard was courtesy by Niamh Houston, aka Chipcell, and it is from the video game Super Hexagon by Terry Kavanagh. So, as you can see, it's pretty manacle, sort of like rhythmic pulse to it, and that definitely suits the game. Niamh Houston is actually from Northern Ireland, and as I said, Terry Kavanagh is from Ireland itself, although now in England. And basically, Super Hexagon is kind of an abstract, rhythmic, complete reactionary game. You basically see a hexagon in the middle of the screen. You've got this little triangle. You can move the triangle around the hexagon, and meanwhile, suddenly, it's like the hexagon is the center of the universe or a black hole, because all these walls are suddenly coming around from the outside and shrinking down and converging towards it. So you've got to rapidly move that little triangle all around, trying to avoid everything that's going across. Now, when I first heard about this game, people were saying, whoa, Super Hexagon is a brilliant game. I just lasted for 13 seconds in my last playthrough. And I was thinking, wait, why are you saying so many good things about a game when you clearly can't play it for more than 13 seconds? Isn't that like saying the game is bad, or at least it's too hard or something? And honestly, I was kind of right. But also, I actually played it for myself, and I realized that, like a lot of good games, it's not so much how fast you last or whether it's bad or not. It just, as soon as you fail, it instantly snaps you right back in the action so you can try again. And it's really like the classic sort of, damn, I screwed up, try to do it again, and constantly trying to beat your own score. What happens is that the whole thing is very, very rhythmic and very surreal. Things pulse. The entire screen rotates. Sometimes the whole screen seems to warp. It pulses all these strange, garish colors. And all that time, you've got that electronic synth beating in the background, which I'm fairly sure that Chipcell actually used a Game Boy's, original Game Boy's, to synthesize. And it's just, it's kind of like a surreal techie, thing experience where you spin it around and just desperately try to react really, really quickly, and every time you fail, you quickly press a button, get back in the action. You know, it's actually reminded me a lot of Hotline Miami, just describing it like that, but I'll talk about that game another time, even though the two were released suspiciously close together. Mm-hmm. But then again, don't worry. Yeah, Super Hexagon is just about navigating a triangle around a hexagon. Hotline Miami is more about taking place in 80s Miami and you going around and doing not nice things to various different people who get in your way. Let's talk about Hotline Miami another time. But both games and Bahamut, they really get you in the pace with electronic music, fast trigger reactions, desperately trying to work through it. And then when you screw up, you're right back in the action, because they realize that, you know, like in any video game, you know, when you screw up, that's just a sign to get right back in and have a bit more fun, you know? Any good game does that. Actually, I consider it a cardinal sin of any video game for if you die to take a long time to get back into the action. Duke Nukem Forever did this by having long load times on the Xbox. I remember Soldier of Honor on the Dreamcast had a loading time that was over a minute. And actually, one game, I think it was Too Human, actually, not to be confused with Beyond Two Souls, also had this really long animation of an angel bringing your soul to Valhalla every time you died. And that really annoyed a lot of people, because it's like, you know, they just pummeled the pad and wanted to get back to playing. So, you know, if you die in a video game, get right back in there. That's the important thing. Okay, so far we've covered a putting game, and then we covered a surreal, abstract, very puzzling indie game. So can you guess through that passion what we're going to cover next? Why, a post-apocalyptic role-playing game released in the late 90s. If you're wondering how the heck could you have predicted that, then you probably realize that you couldn't have, because I don't really have a pattern to things in this show. Every so often I really try to throw in a theme just to tie everything together and pretend to look like I know what I'm doing and that I actually know what sort of games I've got, but this is not one of those shows, and you'll just have to accept that. Thank you. So, what game am I going to tackle on? Well, none other than the eponymous Fallout. Yes, Fallout. You may have heard of it from, it's one of those classic properties that was brought into being and then kind of went by the wayside, and then many, many years later it got a revival that was actually really successful, so people started liking it. But rather than tackle all those things, I think I'll just tackle the original game that started all, Fallout. Well, although technically it was developed by Interplay in the late 90s. It's 2D, isometric, and alright, why don't I play another bit of music from it? But essentially, there are all these vaults around the place. There's been a nuclear holocaust, effectively, and suddenly you've been living a sheltered life in a most literal sense, because you've been living in this vault, Vault 13, your entire life. Suddenly, you've got a slight problem. The water your water purification system is broken down. And so the leader of the vault says, listen, we got to get someone out there looking around to try to find this chip so that we can keep drinking water and not die, because if we die, otherwise we'll die in just over 100 days. And so he basically says to you, you need to go out there. And you're going, okay. And so suddenly you're thrust into a post-apocalyptic landscape. You have no idea what's going on, what sort of environment you have to deal with, or what the heck. All you've got is a location of another vault that might have a purification trip. Now, fortunately, as you come across, as you travel all the terrain of the desert and everything else, you manage to come across this this small little place called Shady Sands, where suddenly, for the first time ever, you're given a bit of hope. And that's because, essentially, Shady Sands is a small community of people who are ex-vault dwellers and have built a nice little village that, with water and farming and everything. And suddenly you think that they might be a bit of hope. This is a track from the game. It's music of the background of that level. It's called Second Chance, and have a listen. And that was Second Chance by Mark Morgan from Fallout, which was developed by Interplay Entertainment. Now, Mark Morgan has done a lot of composition and music work for a lot of other Interplay games, such as Wasteland, Planescape, and he's also composed for music too, including Killer Instinct, if anyone TV series, which I don't know, and also Birds of Prey, a TV series that I liked, no one else heard about, and only lasted for one season, so yeah. So Fallout just had a lot of potential to it. You basically are thrown out into this post-apocalyptic landscape. You can pretty much go anywhere from the start, although you'll generally be guided in a couple of directions at the beginning, so you can try to figure out and put your plan together. Your earlier plan is just to get that water chip, try to save your entire vault, but as you go around the place, you find that there's a lot more going on in this world that you have no previous knowledge of that you wanted. And you're dealing with humans, survivors, raiders, bikers, and also certain people who've been changed a bit by all the radiation that's been lying around. Not to mention other people who just like to don gigantic, powerful suits of armor and go around strutting their thing around the place. The great thing about Fallout is that there's just a lot of choice, a lot of decision about how you approach the situation. And at the start of the game, you decide, you know, like how strong you are, how agile you are. You know, do you want to go through everything just by brute forcing your way through everything, force, firepower, everything, or do you want to just be able to talk with people? And talking with people is vital in this game. There's so many people, everything from a thieves guild, a gigantic, you know, like I said, a bunch of people who use these power suits, associations by, you know, all these raiders and everything. So you can quickly form alliances by talking, trying to suggest what you need or don't need. And if you help the right people, then they can end up giving you really cool weaponry or armor or something, or maybe they can travel with you, and so if you deal with a threat, that you can deal with them as a team effort. You can also sneak around people as well and steal things from them. Well, of course, if they catch you stealing, it might be unpleasant, but it's still a pretty cool thing to do, since, well, not really cool to say, but it's just something you can do in the game. That's kind of what these games are, really. You know, they give you a general good objective, but if you want to just completely flout morals and do whatever the heck you want, they say, well, it's a video game, why shouldn't you be able to do it the whole way you want? And that's pretty cool as well. The aesthetics are pretty cool. The whole environment and theme is pretty cool as well. One thing that pretty much everyone has noted is that there's kind of like a retro-futurism thing to it, like inspiration from the 50s and stuff. I mean, it starts with music by the Ink Spots, you know, maybe a classic tune. Maybe. No, I'm not saying it's maybe is a classic tune. I'm saying the classic tune is maybe, you know. And there's just a lot of... And as you go around, you see all these things like, you know, like advertisements for like 50s American products and stuff, and I think you even see all these nuclear powered cars going around, which I've only seen prototypes for, because there was actually a moment in American history where people were seriously proposing the idea of nuclear powered cars that were kind of weird ones. They would have been gigantically heavy and like kind of wide and very weird, but I mean, like, you know, why not power a car by nuclear power? Just shove a few pellets in and then you're good to go. Yeah, brilliant. Okay, but of course the idea of how a car accident could basically shed the area in Fallout was probably not expected. So, but if we can draw from that, we can say that the nuclear fallout wasn't just caused by a gigantic nuclear war, which, and of course the war apparently doesn't change that much, but also by a huge amount of car accidents, because of course this is America, and given the fact that actually this game is located on the west coast of America, and given how many cars there are on Los Angeles, I think we have another sort of insight as to why the heck there'd be so much fallout in the video game Fallout. But generally, the game was pretty powerful stuff. Just let you do a lot of things, had a lot of options and approach the situation you did. In fact, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's one enemy, and you know, which you'd think that you'd have to go toe-to-toe with and fight. But it turns out if you've done your research, if you know how to talk to them right, you can find an entirely different way to win the game. Just by talking and spreading information, and boy, it was so much fun to do something like that. Because games tend to reward brute force, they don't reward actually, you know, being strategic and coming up with fun stuff enough. As I said, it had a sequel, Fallout 2, and then it had a bunch of spin-offs, and then there was a whole murky time, and then in the last console, in this console generation, came around with Fallout 3 for the PC, Xbox 360, and PlayStation 3, and that changed everything. With the old game, you were kind of like a top down, and you know, you controlled and moved around, and then every time you dealt with an enemy, it was a turn based combat. But when it came to the Xbox, it was more a first person shooter. There were a lot of changes. Fans can debate, and you know, which is better and which isn't. And to be honest, I just haven't really played enough of Fallout 3 to know for sure. But I like Fallout, I like Aspara, and I like you can go in a lot of crazy places with it. So that's the most important thing. Well, you know, most important thing is that you enjoy the game. Right. Okay, I'm going to play. There's a track from this. As you can see, it's got a very haunting soundtrack. I'm going to play another one. This is from an area called The Hub in the game. The name of the track is called Trader's Life. And I really just do think that it's an area you return to in the game a lot. So I think it kind of really sets, like I said, the hub in the game, the sense of where exactly you are. So, okay, here's a track. And that was great. Like I said, that was A Trader's Life from Fallout. Well, thank you for listening. This has been David Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening. And by the way, I wasn't going to do this because essentially I prefer to play music from the games themselves, and if a game licenses music, then it's not technically game music. But since this song is such an integral part of the game Fallout, playing both the beginning and end of the game, and it really sets the atmosphere for the time setting and everything, I'll leave this show with The Ink Spots with the song Maybe. Thank you for listening.
Are all alone. Maybe the one who is waiting for you will prove untrue. Then what will you do? Maybe you'll sit and sigh, wishing that I were near. Then maybe you'll ask me to come back again. And maybe I'll say maybe. Maybe you'll think of me when you are all alone. Maybe the one who is waiting for you will prove untrue. Then what will I do? Maybe you'll sit inside, wishing that I were near. Then maybe you'll ask me to come back again. And maybe I'll say,